Okay, what amazing meeting so far. Right, let's start with a prayer. Holy Spirit, thank you for being here as we've worshipped. Thank you that you've been here as we've declared your word over people. And now I ask that you will speak to us and move in us and reveal the Father to us. Amen. Okay, before I actually start, because this happens to me quite a lot. When other people get a word, I think, wow, that's a fantastic word. I wish I got that one. Yeah? I used to. I got over it. I was like, oh, they got a word and I didn't. Yeah? Rejoice in that word over them and then claim it for yourself. You know, if your heart was moved to think, I wish that was for me, 100% it can be. 100% it can be. Ask God, said, I want that too, Lord, please. He loves you as much as he loves everybody else. Just to, you know, that's got nothing to do with this, but just had to throw that in. All right, I'd like to start by reading a psalm. This psalm, Psalm 60, it will come up in bits if you want, but if you want to use your tablets and Bibles and things and follow it, check that what's up there is right, you know. Please do. This is a psalm of David about a time when he was feeling a bit of pressure, which happened quite a lot. Okay, and I just want to follow through and look at how David was feeling and what was happening, what God was saying, because I really, really feel that River Slough, river and river everywhere, God's people can take hold of that, but especially for us, River Slough, this morning, and see the parallels, and just, well, let's do that. Okay, so Psalm 60. Start off with some little encouraging word for us all. You have rejected us, God, and burst upon us. You have been angry, now restore us. You have shaken the land and torn it open. Mend its fractures, for it is quaking. You have shown your people desperate times. You have given us wine that has made us stagger. But for those who fear you, you have raised a banner to be unfurled against the bow. Save us and help us with your right hand, that those you love may be delivered. God has spoken from his sanctuary. This is what God's saying. In triumph, I will parcel out Shechem and measure off the valley of Succoth. Gilead is mine. Manasseh is mine. Ephraim is my helmet. Judah is my scepter. Moab is my washbasin. On Edom I toss my sandal. Over Philistia I shout in triumph. And then it comes back to David. So, who will bring me to the fortified city? Who will lead me to Edom? Is it not you, God? You who have now rejected us? And no longer go out with our armies. Give us aid against the enemy, for human help is worthless. With God, we will gain the victory, and he will trample down our enemies. Okay, so it gets better. Okay, I mean, there's some really great stuff in the middle, but you know, where are we going with this? Trust me. I'm a doctor. Okay, four parts. Here, 1-3, David cries out for help because they are struggling and reeling from the effects of attacks from outside. God has let them face difficult times. One or two of you may feel some sympathy with that. Just one or two. I certainly do. Okay, verses 4 and 5, a statement of faith in God and what he has done, and a prayer that he will deliver them because of it. Okay, so okay, all this is happening, but this is what God's like. Verse responding to that, God declares his victory over the situation. There are statements of what he is going to do in Israel, but also statements of fact about his people. So, okay, I'm going to do this, and remember, this is my people we're talking about. They are mine. And statements of fact about Israel's enemies too. I shout in triumph. And then verses 9 to 12, David asked God to lead them into that victory. The same God who had not given them victory before, but David is putting the past and disappointments aside and takes hold of what God is saying now. He's got that Rama words. He's declaring it. Okay. Right, verses 1 to 3. There we go. You have rejected us, God, and burst upon us. You have been angry, now restore us. You have shaken the land and torn it open. Mend its fractures, for it is quaking. You have shown your people desperate times. You have given us wine that makes us stagger. So this is David, who's on the throne. It's not when he's getting chased. This is a time when he's king. But there's problems. The people over by the Euphrates have rebelled and thrown down his monument there, that we know at least this time. And obviously there's a problem. Oh dear. You've not gone out with our enemies, with our armies. Yes? We're quaking. I mean, verse 2, if you want to think about Brexit for a minute, if you can bother. I mean, yeah, it is quaking. Okay, that's not in my notes, by the way. That's for nothing. Okay, so I saw this and I thought, oh, wow, this is a problem. But then it was the verse 4 and following on from that, which really excited me. So if we could look at the next one, please. But for those who fear you, you have raised a banner to be unfurled against the bow. Save us and help us with your right hand, that those you love may be delivered. It's such a turning point from disaster and nothing's going right and everything's falling apart. And then we get this. But for those who fear you, you have raised the banner to be unfurled against the bow. That's a prophetic word from David. It's obviously lifted up in his heart. And he sort of got the words. But if you look further down, he's still going on about it's not working. So that is obviously inside of him, he's got, but for those who fear you, you have raised the banner. Have you, God? Oh, wow. Where did that come from? That's the impression I've got. So I want to have a look at that. First of all, we can't get away from the statement that this is for those who fear God. Now, fearing God is one of those things which I'm still trying to get my head round. Okay, I know it's not, oh, it's God, and I better hide, and I'm going to run away and never talk to him. Bill Johnson talks about there's two sorts of fear, and Chris Allison. There's the fear where you run away, but there's also the fear where it makes you come close and hold tight. Yeah, and it's obviously that one. I'm not saying I've got that down yet, but it's for those who run towards him, knowing he is greater than anything else. Those who revere and honour him, sometimes it's translated as revere, more than the opposition or circumstances. And that's really helped me. So this has happened, and that's scary, okay? But I trust in God. I'm not going to be afraid of those because I revere my God. He's in charge. He has said this. Yes, I revere him, I honour him. That's where I'm going. That's what I'm going to hold on to. As we heard today, yes, from Julie, she moved in whole time. You get that sense. Well, you know. Yeah, he's greater than the opposition or the circumstances or even past disappointments. Because David has been very disappointed. Yeah, it's just not working. It's not working. We've sent our armies out. They come back. It's not worked. You cannot overestimate God. You cannot overestimate God. When we get to see him, because we will. We'll all get to see him. Imagine that. Let's stop and think about that. We will get to see him. No matter how close we get now, no matter how much we understand now, we will fall on our faces in awe and wonder. At how, and then I put dot, 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 fill in the blank. How amazing he is, how faithful he is, how loving he is, how beautiful he is. Whatever you want to put in there, he is going to be more than that for us when we actually see him. So we can't, it's just beyond us to understand. We'll spend all eternity getting some. And if he's that big and that amazing and that faithful and that strong and that victorious, we can trust him. We can stay there. Even when it's hard, we can trust him. And that is the place for breakthrough to start. In his presence, hearing him, and with a reverence for all he is saying and doing. So for those who fear you, those who come into your presence and get hold of it and know it, you have raised a banner to be unfurled against the bow. You can wave it over your head and it will break the chains, set you free, and it will, it was against the bow. Okay. Lost my place. Okay. Right. So I tried to focus in on this. So it's for those who fear you, those who come into your presence, those who love you, those who get a sense of how wonderful you are, God. You have raised a banner to be unfurled against the bow. Banner. So as soon as I saw banner, I thought of Song of Solomon. Yes. 2:4, he has brought me to his banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. Yeah? So this banner that's over us, it's got love splattered all over it. Yeah? Just stop and picture that. Wherever you are, whatever situation you're in, he has brought you to a place of celebration and feasting. You may not feel like it, but you can say, no, his banner over me, his love, I can do this. I claim this. And then as soon as you start thinking about this place of feasting with his banner over the top of you, who else is there? Prizes for this? Not really. If you're sat in a place of feasting in the presence of my enemies, it says in Psalm 23. And I know I'm taking a bit from here and a bit from there and a bit from there, but this is what I've got. Yeah, he has brought me to his banquet hall, and his banner over me is love. Yes, and the next one is, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. So I mean, I work on pictures. You know, I'm not so good with words, but the words get into pictures, and the pictures come back into the words. I want you to really picture that. Yes, you are in his presence, in this banqueting hall. His banner over you is love. And there's a table of feasting of good things that he has just put there. More than enough in the present. And there, I had the picture of a little window outside, and all the enemies couldn't come in, looking at the, through the window at me and my friends and my God feasting on all that he's done to provide for me, to give me everything I need. Thank you. And the next one was, okay, this banner is protection against the bow. The bow sends forth arrows, so the arrows don't hit me. And I thought, well, it wasn't a bow before, it was a shield of faith. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Yeah, so that shield of faith, it must be connected to this banner of love. And I thought, yeah, it is. Because as we get into that presence and we hear his voice and we feel his presence and we know he's so strong and we know he's greater than anything we face, it's that love washes over us, as Julie was talking about. How can we not have faith in him then? It's when we forget that and we think, oh no, look at this, look at this. And this didn't quite work out the way I expected last time. But we think, oh, well, what's going on? But no, we can hold up that shield of faith when we remember how much he loves us. We can hold up that shield of faith when we see that banner over the top of us and all the good things he's given us. That love is connected to that faith, I'm sure it is. Okay. One really important point here, though. God has put this banner over the top of us. But can anybody remember the word that described it? Well, I'm back in school now. Can you spot the adjective, please? It was furled up. Yes? You have to unfurl it. You have to use it. You have to lift that shield of faith, but you have to unfurl it. You have to wave it over the top of your head. We have to use what we've been given. We have to declare what God has said. That's what Jesus did. And he is our example and model. We are to do what he did and greater works than he did. Not that I want to scare anyone. We have been given the gun, but we have to pull the trigger. We have been given the word, but we have to say it. The banner is there. We've provided it. We have to unfurl it. Okay, I heard a great word from Chris Vallotton a while ago now about fiery darts, which were the protection of the shield and the arrows, which was really so helpful to me at the time. He said, when we get sudden ideas pop in our head, sort of from out of nowhere, you know, where did that come from? Yeah. Linked to a strong feeling, the fiery bit. Yeah. Those can be the fiery darts. A sudden feeling of anger for almost no reason at all. Yeah. Because somebody said a wrong word or looked at you strangely. Feeling everybody hates me or I'm useless or God could never forgive that. This situation is too difficult. Yeah, those. But it's not just, oh, this, and you don't think it's, that's ridiculous. It sort of comes in and it's burning and it's fiery and you think, wow, and it gets to you and it gets to your heart. It gets to your mind and you think, oh, and it seems so reasonable. Yeah, I've been driving down the road and I've been having, in my mind, sort of conversations with this van driver up ahead about what I would say to him, if only he'd stop and, you know, and how it would, and I just, what the, on earth is going on here? Yes? He got a bit far close to me when he came, but that was it. And suddenly, you know, and but it seemed so right at the time. But no, no. Those are those fiery darts. God, you're not like this. I'm not like this. Words that contradict what God has said. Well, it could be just, you know, those, you're on your own. It's not somebody else. And the devil is just saying, yeah, you're useless. You can't do this. You failed last time. Yes? And you start saying, everybody hates me. Nobody loves me. I think I'll go and eat worms. Big, fat, you know, slimy ones, hairy ones. I can't remember now. You can tell I work with the younger children. Sorry. But those words, they get in, we are hit, we're wounded, and we're out of the battle. If we don't say, actually, no, that's rubbish. Yeah? A thought that can seem so urgent and so sensible and right, but actually, when you look at it, you can see just where it came from. Yeah? The evil one. These ideas come, and we need to have that shield of faith, have that banner of love over the top of us, and know what God has said to us and declare it. Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, Julie reminded us of some of the things that God has said and done over the past year. Yeah, it's amazing. One of them, and Peter had a bad back, and we prayed for him, and it got better. Yeah. I said, did we? Oh, yeah! I totally forgotten that. Yeah, if somebody said, did you have a bad back last night and get prayed for? I would have said, no. Seriously. But, oh, yeah. So I can now, I have the authority in Christ. I had it anyway, but the testimony to say, look, I have been healed of a bad back. We need to declare it. They will go and we'll forget. But we need to keep going on. Bill Johnson, sorry to keep going on about over in Bethel. Yeah, he has lists and lists of prophecies and things and testimonies. And that's his fun time. He just goes through them. When he's on a plane, because he flies all over there, he has them with him. He just goes through them, declaring them, reading them, refreshing them, yeah, claiming them again. We need to do that. To hold them up against those fiery arrows and say, no, this is not what God has said. This is not what God has done. This is who I am. I am more than a conqueror in Jesus Christ who redeemed me and equipped me. I choose to trust my God who loved me so much he died for me. It's faith that stops those. In the song we've been singing recently, it starts, I thought these walls would have been fallen by now. Remember? About them going around Jericho. And how often do we feel, oh, it's so long. I thought they'd have been fallen by now. But it goes on. You move the mountains, and I believe you can do it again. And that's what we've got to do. Not look at the walls that are still there at the moment. We've got to think, no, you've moved the mountains. These walls are much smaller than mountains. They can be pushed aside, thrown in the sea. We need to focus on what God is doing and not be limited by his past disappointments. Okay, let's move on to verse 5. Oh, yep. Save us and help us with your right hand, that those you love may be delivered. Okay, so this is still David crying out. Makes sense, but then I thought, save us. God has saved us and helped us with his right hand, and his right hand is Jesus. His strongest thing. Your right hand is your strength. Now, God could have sent his left toe or his left hand or his ear, or, you know, I'm not trying to be disrespectful, or looked or glanced or thought. No, he sent the strongest, most precious thing he had, save us and deliver us. And it says in Romans, if he's given us Jesus, how will he not give us everything else that we need? Everything else that we need. And it's, I really want to get a sense of that. It's just so big. God is so big. His promises are so big. His love is so big. Disappointments and the past, present problems cannot match up. Okay, next bit. I loved it. God has spoken from his sanctuary. So now God speaks. All this has been going on. God has spoken from his sanctuary. Remember, the place is in ruins. The armies are defeated. Everybody's rebelling. Woe is me. Yes, but he's gone to God and he's said, and he's got a word. God has spoken from the sanctuary. In triumph, I will pass out Shechem and measure off the valley of Succoth. Gilead. Oh, here we go again. Gilead is mine, and Manasseh is mine. Ephraim is my helmet, and Judah is my scepter. Let's just stop there. This is about Israel. This is about his people that he loves. This is about his people that have been defeated and are feeling the pressure. He said, I will parcel out Shechem. Shechem is a place in Israel. So it's going to be divided up and given to his people who are suffering. I will measure off the valley of Succoth, part of Israel. This mine. I can do what I want. I'm going to put this bit there. I'm going to, those people will come here. I am in total, complete charge. Gilead, over in the Transjordan, is mine. Beautiful, beautiful place with rolling hills and covered in sheep. It's mine. Never mind about those people who come and attack. It's mine. Remember, it's mine. Manasseh, half on the Transjordan, half in Israel, is mine. These are my people. Ephraim is my helmet. Was it the north? Don't know whether that's why it's the helmet. Not quite sure. But Ephraim is the top bit. My people. Judah is my scepter. The place where I'm going to rule from. Where Jerusalem is. Where the temple is. Where the King of Kings is coming from. It's mine. Just see it as mine. Moab is my wash basin. Now, I've read some of the things on it, and it's as though, yeah, they don't really count. They're useful. They're not Israel, they're Moab. They're descendants from Lot. Yeah, but there's a place for them. What he's going to do with it? Edom, that's Israel, Jacob's brother. Yeah, I tossed my sandal. Yeah, now, tossing the sandal is a way of claiming land. If you thought, well, this is my land, you put something that you possess with, usually an old sandal, because if it got lost, you didn't mind too much. Yeah. Apparently, in Jesus' time, and around before that, if you were an Israelite and you didn't want to break the Sabbath, but you knew you had to go on the journey, you were allowed to go, I think, one stadia or six, a certain distance. Yeah? And you needed to do more than that. What you used to do is on the day before, you get your servant to go and leave a sandal that far away. So you weren't traveling. You were going from your house to what counted as your house. It was only a sandal, but it was your house. And then you had the same distance because it was your house. So then you could travel another stadia. I'm not sure what the distance was, or 10 stadia. And if you could, then put another sandal and do it again. It's sort of getting round the law. But it gives you an idea of, this is mine. Yeah, on Edom, I toss my sandal. That's mine. I'm claiming it. Yes, they think they're this nation. I'm claiming them as mine. And Philistia, so Edom and Moab, sort of connected in through Lot and Israel, Jacob. Philistia, they're just the enemies. So they get less of a, I'm just claiming them, and a shout in triumph. Just destruction. Just your enemies are going to be defeated. You will triumph over them. I will triumph over them, says God. Amen. Okay. This is then. So what now? How am I bringing this? This is all over the place. This is Shechem and Succoth and Gilead and Manasseh and Ephraim and Judah. What do you need? Where do you need breakthrough? What is your problem? Is it in Succoth? Is it in Shechem? Is it in Moab? Are you facing enemies? What? This is not a... Well, if you have this problem, God's going to sort it. This is... victories are just coming everywhere. This is breakthrough in wherever you go. You can claim what you need everywhere. This side of the Jordan, that side of the Jordan. Over near the Euphrates, underneath, up there. What's the problem? The victory is coming. I'm declaring it here and now. Whatever problem you can think of, I'm bigger than it. That's what it said to me. Okay. Okay, and the next one. So we get to... back to David now. So God said all that, and David's there and thinking, okay, that's brilliant. But who will bring me to the fortified city? Who will lead me to Edom? Is it not you, God? It's got to be you. You who have now rejected us, but you rejected us. There's nobody else. But we didn't do it last time. It's been a problem. It's been a problem for ages. And you don't go out with our armies. But it's only you. There's nobody else. And you just said you're going to do it. Give us aid against the enemy, for human help is worthless. Somebody else said that to me recently. Human help is worthless. Give us aid against the enemy. With God, we will gain the victory, and he will trample down our enemies at full stop. That's where we get to at the end. That is where we are going. That we have had the problems. How many words of prophecy have we had over this last year? And we're beginning to see them, and we're beginning to see the healings. We've had more testimonies today. It is so amazing, and I am, in case you hadn't guessed, so excited. I believe this psalm is really a prophetic statement for us about, well, claim it, go do it, arise and shine, for your light has come. The nations are coming to you. But you have got to hold up that banner and unfurl it. David didn't then go, fantastic, party time, God's going to do it. 5-day holiday, let's see what he does. He then got the armies together and went out. And he fought. And he claimed every one of those things that God had promised. And we have to do that. But it's God who's winning the victory. It's God who's going to do it. And we know that. We know that when we get close to him. It starts in his presence. If we're trying to do it outside of his presence, it's not going to work. It's when we know and we've got his heart of love for the people around us, that peace in us, then it will happen. Okay, so nearly at the end, But the thing that really was the icing on the cake and the cherry on the icing, we got all this and we got promises and it was wonderful. Yeah, but what happened? What actually happened? Right. Fortunately, it tells us. So if we get the next one, I think it should be the title of Psalm 60, which is a bit weird. For the director of music to the tune of Lily of the Covenant, we all know that one, a miktam of David for teaching. I like the bit. You can use this for teaching. When he fought Aram him and Aram Zorbah, and when Joab returned and struck down 12,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. So this is the psalm that goes with that victory. Okay, but that's a victory. And that psalm's not about a victory. That's a psalm of people in trouble and God promising the victory. Yeah? So this psalm, I believe, was written for by David when he's in trouble. Yes? And when he's got the word of God and when he's getting ready to go. Later on, when they're copying this all out, they said, oh, I know when he wrote that psalm. It was then. Yeah? And they put the title in afterwards. Yeah? So, let's go to 2 Samuel 8, which is recording David's victories after they went out. In the course of time, not straight away, but in the course of time, David defeated the Philistines, said that, and subdued them. And he took Metheg, Amna, from the control of the Philistines. David also defeated the Moabites, said that. So the Moabites became stuck. There was a bit in there about cutting them in half. I just missed that bit out. And so, you know, we don't need that. So the Moabites became subject to David and brought him tribute. Moreover, David defeated Hadadezer, son of Rehob, king of Zorbah, when he went to restore his monument at the Euphrates River. So that's all, by the way, over by the Euphrates. So obviously they've torn that down. Yeah? And he's gone, hey, you can't do that. Takes his army way over there. David captured 1,000 of his chariots, 7,000 charioteers, and 20,000 foot soldiers. He hamstrung all but 100 of the chariot horses. You're not raising another army with that lot. Thank you. It keeps going. It's good. When the Arameans of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, king of Zorbah, David struck down 22,000 of them. So he's defeated one army, and they say, hang on, we're getting defeated. This wasn't expected. Come and help us. So they bring another army against him, 22,000 of them. I think God might have had something to do with it. When he put garrisons in the Armenian kingdom of Damascus, and the Arameans became subject to him and brought tribute. The Lord gave David victory wherever he went. Whatever it is that you're facing, you can have victory in God. David took, remember those great big gold shields that were put up? This is when he gets them. Didn't stay in Jerusalem very long after Solomon, unfortunately, but hey-ho. David got the gold shields that belonged to the officers of I can't even say it now, I've said it twice, Deza, and brought them to Jerusalem. From Teba and Berothai, towns that belonged to him, King David took a great quantity of bronze. Remember, he was building it all up, ready for the temple later on. When Tou, king of Hamath, heard that David had defeated the entire army of Hadadezer, he sent his son Joram to King David to greet him and congratulate him on his victory in battle over Hadadezer, who had been at war with Tou. Joram bought him articles of gold and silver and of bronze. So now, not only is he going out and defeating this one and this one, other people are coming and say, hey, that's great. Let's be friends. We like you. Yeah, we're not at war with them anymore. We don't want to be at war with you either. Have some money. Have some more money. Yes? King David dedicated these articles to the Lord, as he had done with the silver and gold from all the nations he had subdued. Edom and Moab and the Ammonites and the Philistines and Amalek. He also dedicated the plunder taken from the king of Zorbah. So all, you know, all those who were my wash basin, I'm going to throw it in. All mentioned. And David became famous after he returned from striking down 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. I like it. In the psalm, it was Joab, his chief general. Yes, in the history books, it's, oh, David did that. Yeah. So, and actually, it was 6,000 more. It's grown a bit, like Chinese whispers. Yeah. So, if his general did it, the king did it. The king gets the glory of it, so it's fine. He put garrisons throughout Edom, and all the Edomites became subject to David. The Lord gave David victory wherever he went. The Lord gave you victory wherever you go. Where the foot of your, the sole of your foot goes, you can claim that land. He can give you victory. Declare the victory. Hear his, get his presence, hear what he's saying, and then declare what he's saying. Right, to sum up, I believe that here's a prophetic word of encouragement to us. Really do. Verses 1 to 3 is where Slough, Britwell, and some of us have been. We've been through a time of prayer and crying out and are continuing to do that. God has been and is declaring his love for us. This is verses 4 and 5. We need to start from there. Revere him and make sure we have his heart for us and for those around us. He has raised his banner over us. It is there now. But we need to unfurl it and wave it and run with it. Use it to protect our thoughts and attitudes. Have faith in him and his love for us and those around. Verse 6 to 8 is God's declaration of victory, of what he wants to do. And it's not a little victory here and there. It is mighty changes all over the place and plundering the enemy and setting up godly strongholds and bringing back gold for the sanctuary. And to me, that's people. So what victories do you need? Just stop and think about that for a minute. What victories do you need? What victories do you want to see? What victories have you been waiting for? What has God said? And what is he saying about those situations? I just love those books you've been giving out, Mary. Just... Do not get robbed by lies about who you are and what you can't do. Do not get robbed by lies about what God can't do. He is the God of the impossible. Start in his presence, always start in his presence, and take hold of what he is saying and doing. Then declare what God has said and don't give way. And don't give way. Exciting and amazing victories that only God could bring are on the way. And we are invited to be a part of it. It's not our strength, but we are invited to be a part of it. As it said in verse 12, with God, we will gain the victory. And just a final verse to finish with, which some of you may have heard before. Arise and shine. Your light has come. Your light has come. No, your light has come. Individually, everybody in sitting in front of me here, your light has come. God loves you with such an incredible love, such a passion. He delights over you with singing, individually and personally. Don't think it's somebody else. Don't, please don't think it's somebody else. I did for years. Nations will come to your light. Nations will come to your light. Thank you.